All right. That's how you strut onto a stage, all right? That's how you do it. All right. Beautiful. How you doing, everyone? Oh, wow. It's a real privilege to bring the word tonight. And my wife and I are the creative pastors here at Shire Live. So normally I am worship leading, not preaching, but it's a real honor to do it tonight. And we love our creative team. Who enjoyed the worship tonight? We have seriously the best worship and creative team on the planet. And Sarah and I have been here now for about 2.5 years. And it's been such a joy to see our team go from strength to strength. And, you know, I don't think our team's been as healthy and as joyful and as family as what it is right now. And so it's been an incredible journey to be a part of that and to see that. Feeling good. You guys ready for the Word of God tonight? It is a privilege. I know that every time I preach, Pastor Brad is never here. So I can take that as a compliment that he trusts me or that something else. But I think that he trusts me. And I'm going to take a risk tonight, maybe something a little bit unwise. I'm going to be stepping out onto holy ground. And I'm going to take on Pastor Brad's series, Pits, Prisons, and Palaces. Hey, I'm just proud of myself being able to say that. Say that 5 times fast. Pits, prisons, palaces. Very good. All right. We're going to look at the life of an incredible young man, Joseph. But also, I really wanted to take it to another level tonight and also parallel that with the life of David. These are two men that both ended in a palace, but both had a very different journey of getting there. And for you, you might identify with Joseph, but I feel like tonight there's some people here that will really identify with David. So I don't have much time because tonight, come on now. Tonight, let me get started, man. It's going to get better, I promise. Tonight, we're going to get into some ministry, and I really feel like God's got something for tonight. And as we were just worshiping, I just really felt, there's some work, there's some things that God is wanting to do in people's lives, and he's wanting to unlock some certain things. I think we've got a real perception of, or some of us have had a glimpse of what God has called us to. We've had a window. God has given us a vision as to what we're being called to, but some of us fear that. Some of us haven't fully connected with that. Some of us haven't fully claimed that. And I'm feeling like tonight that some people are going to have that unlock in their lives, that no longer fear it, you're going to grab a hold of it, you're going to live it out, and it's not something to be afraid of. So we're going to get into that. All right. So tonight's message, if this was a Sunday morning, and it's not, but if it was a Sunday morning, it would be called The Struggle for Significance. That's an AM. That's a very AM title. But because it's the PM, and we're a little bit cooler, all right. We're a bit cooler, all right. We flow a little bit wilder, all right. In a PM service, tonight's message is called "Getting Lost in the Game," all right. Getting lost in the game, all right. So if you don't know, like, if you haven't heard me sing, I'm singing like a little bit like a black man, all right? So I need you to respond like a gospel. I need you to respond. And if you respond, all right, if you respond, we're going to get somewhere tonight, all right? So getting lost in the game. If you don't know what this means, getting lost in the game, well, we're approaching NBA season. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. So NBA is on its way, and so good. So good. Go Wolves. And this is our year. This is our year. Get on board. All right. So the NBA is just around the corner. And so getting lost in the game is, it's about that player that he doesn't play for the team. He's just about stats. He just wants his stats. It's all about getting his face on ESPN. He wants his face on the cover of NBA 2K. It's not about even wins and losses. It's about my rebounds, about my points, give me my stats, all right, and going home at the end of the day and not looking at whether the team won or whether there's a connection within the team. he's only worried about the stats. And so, yeah, if he doesn't care about the team. He doesn't care about what people think of him off the court. And he won't pass the ball to the open man. He wants the highlight dunk. He won't sacrifice. He won't stay in his lane. He won't give honor. He won't let go of his preference. And he won't commit to the process because he's lost in the game. All right. He's lost in the game. He is struggling for his significance because a lot of us are looking for an outward expression. We're needing to see how does our significance weigh up? What can I measure it against? Who can I measure it against? And in that we find our significance, but that is not what significance, and that is not how God defines significance. Is it wrong? Is it wrong to want a life of significance? No, it is not. No, it is not. Because I believe everyone in this room, you're called to have a significant life. But there's a danger attached to self-made significance. There's a danger attached to creating your own significance. Because what you create, you'll have to replicate in order for it to continue to regenerate. If you try and create your own level of significance, you're the one who's going to have to continue to replicate it in order for it to continue to regenerate. But the goodness of God, and when we find favor in God and when we have our significance in Him, what He authors, He will finish. We don't have to be the author and finisher of our own lives because we've got a God who knew us in our mother's womb, who has already laid out the plans that He has for our lives. In Joseph, the life of Joseph, really the whole story of Joseph can be summed up with this one phrase, and that's the process of significance. The whole story is about the process of significance. And it really shows, this whole life shows what it's like to live with a level of insecurity mixed in with a whole dose of significance. And I want to share this quickly with you, with an unhealthy blend of insecurity mixed in with a desire for significance, you'll be led to make poor decisions. You'll manipulate circumstances for your benefit. You'll choose the easy way. You'll put yourself in wrong positions. You'll struggle with a fear of man. You'll put others down to pull yourself up. You'll lack obedience, choosing the flashy over faithfulness. You'll struggle to be a servant. You'll always feel overlooked. You'll never champion anyone else's success. You'll feel failure. You'll never feel like you have enough. You'll lack joy in the moment. You'll never accept the process. You'll try and make everything happen yourself. You lack faith in God for your future. You avoid altar calls for the fear of perception. You'll walk through an open door even if you know it's the wrong door. You'll laugh in front of the crowd, but you'll cry on your pillow because you're lost in the game. You're lost in the game with this knowing and this acknowledgement that you are called to a life of significance, but also dealing with an unhealthy amount of insecurity in your life. When those two things mix together, it causes these things. It causes us to make these choices and these decisions. And Joseph was lost in the game. See, Joseph had two dreams, two great dreams. Now, incredible dreams, you know, stars bowing down, incredible things. Now, I ask you the question, where did those dreams come from? Who gave Joseph those dreams? If you actually look in the Word of God, you'll be surprised. It actually doesn't say that God gave him the dream. It never says God came to him in a dream. God gave him the dream. Joseph never acknowledges that God had anything to do with the dream. You'd be surprised because you actually just assume that, well, God gave him the dream, right? He must have given him the dream. And I believe that God did give him the dream. But what is surprising is Joseph has no acknowledgement of it at all. And when he's talking to his brothers and he says it to his dad, I've had these two amazing dreams. Not once did he go, hey, God's spoken to me. God's given me this dream. And I think the reason why his brothers and father were like, come on, dude, get over yourself. Because literally there was no acknowledgement. His significance was wrapped up in the dream, not in the person who gave him the dream. And that's where we can get caught up. God gives us a sense of our calling, but we forget who gave us the calling. Who has chosen us? Who has spoken the significance over us? So Joseph is caught up. He's already caught up in the game because his dream is, he's linking his identity to this dream and not to the one who gave him the dream. So if you journey through, I've journeyed through mountains and I've journeyed through valleys, and I can say that what I've experienced in the revelation that God has given me through the journey of my life is that God is much more interested in the process than I am in the destination. I'll say that again, because he's more interested in the process than I am in the destination, because he wants me to be at the destination. He loves for me to be at the destination, but I am more interested in the destination, but he's more interested in the process. God gives us a glimpse. God gives us a glimpse of our destiny. He gives us a glimpse of what he's called us to. And as I said before, like that window, he's given us a glimpse. And I really believe it's through his goodness and his kindness, because if he showed us a glimpse of the process, we wouldn't leave the front door. You know, I don't think Joseph would have said anything if he knew what was about to come. I had no dream. There's no dream to speak of. Everything's cool. Forget about it. Let's just move on. It's all good. It's all good. Like, if he knew what was about to happen, being put in a pit, being put in a prison, if God had showed him that dream, you know, he would never have walked out the door. And it's the same for you and I. God gives us that calling. He gives us a glimpse of our destiny, not to be cruel, but that in the midst of the process, we can hang on to what God promised us. We can hang on to it. So regardless of, okay, man, I'm going through this, but God, you said it. And that's why God shows us through his mercy. He shows us a glimpse of that. And Joseph's in Potiphar's house. He's been sold. He's been through the pit. I'm going to try and paraphrase this quickly because I want to try and get onto this as quickly as possible. And we all know this story, so bear with me. So he's in Potiphar's house and he's been favored. He's been favored his whole life. He's been favored by his father. Now he's favored in Potiphar's house. And he's also very favored by Potiphar's wife. And she makes advances on the brother. And through this test, though, something is revealed in Joseph's heart. And a statement comes out of Joseph's mouth. And I don't think, again, that we would have really seen this. It's in Genesis 39, verse 8 and 9. And it says, so she's come at him and he said, "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he entrusts to my care. No one in this house is greater than I am." So through this test, something's actually revealed in Joseph's heart, that he is still really holding on to this level of significance, that he really enjoys this position of significance. And I actually wonder that if he wasn't holding in so much in love with his position, if this had come up, maybe he would have said it to Potiphar. He would have said, "Potiphar, there's an issue, man. Your wife, she's crazy. And she's lost in the game, man. I don't know. Maybe he feared that if he shared that, he would lose his position." But that's so much of us, you know, like things that are going on in our world, things that are going on in our life, we don't want to share. And we're so delicate about being transparent and being accountable in our lives, because if someone found out, I could lose everything. I could lose it all. I'm not coming down to an altar call. If someone sees me, man, what are they going to think? I'm a leader here. Oh, geez. I can't come down for that. I can't put my hand up for that. And we stay in these bound boxes and we stay lost in the game and we never move into what God has called us to, because we are lost in it. We're caught up in it. And we still consider that if we position ourselves, then we'll get to where we need to go, without thinking that it's God who gave us the dream in the first place. We don't need to manipulate a circumstance to get us to where we need to be. God can find us just where we are. He's in prison and he's found favor again. This dude's just like favor to the max. Let me just give you a little bit of a side note about favor. If you honor favor, you will receive sustained favor or more favor. But Be careful that favor doesn't become an idol, where your honor becomes false praise for your benefit. Because you will advance through your false praise, but you'll end up somewhere you were never graced to be. Wow. Why struggle to push down that door when on the other side of it, there's no grace for you on the other side of it? Why would you belt down that door so hard, position yourself, say the right thing at the right time to the right person to get through that door where you always wanted to be and know that and find out on the other side of that, there's no grace for you. I love what Jackson shared before, Grace, about the response. The grace is on your response. The grace is on your response. I thought the grace is on wherever, but no, the grace is on your response. The grace is on your response to being faithful. Your grace is on the response of being obedient. Your grace, the grace of God is on your response. So Joseph's in prison. That was just a side note. He's got the favor, and he's met by the cupbearer and the baker, and he sees an opportunity to find more favor. And so, chasing the favor, he interprets their dreams, and through a display of his own awesomeness, asked the cupbearer to remember him and tell Pharaoh of his awesomeness. So he's like, here's my gift, here's my awesomeness. Now, can you, when you get to Pharaoh, can you tell him of my awesomeness? That would be great. And right there is a warning that beware of trusting your gift more than God fulfilling your calling. Because God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. You've got to be careful. You've got to be careful of thinking that your gift is the thing that's going to get you through the door. You know what I mean? Your gift is what's going to... I can say right here, like, you know, in terms of just the journey that I've been on, in terms of just, just the doors that God's opened and the things I've been able to be a part of. And I've been wild, been incredible, and God's been so good. And but I can honestly say that growing up, that I was by no stretch of the imagination the most talented person that I grew up with. Best singer, the best vocalist, like, you know, people with runs for days, you know. They never had the same opportunities that I had, but because it's not about your gift, it just doesn't open the door. It doesn't open the door. It's God who opens the door for you. God opens the door, not your giftedness. And so beware of trusting in your gift. At the end of the day, the cupbearer forgets him, and he ends in prison for another. He stays in prison for another 2 years. Did I say? What did I say? Oh, cool. Yeah, you got forgotten. That's so sad, man. That's not funny. Jeez, 2 years, man. All right. He has a dream. So Pharaoh has a dream. The cupbearer remembers him finally, and the king Pharaoh brings him out of, summons him out of prison, and asks him to interpret his dream. And an amazing thing happens. An amazing thing happens right then when he is asked to interpret the dream. And it's something that it's really revealing, and it's in Genesis chapter 41, verse 15 and 16. I don't think I asked the guys to put it on the screen, but Pharaoh said to Joseph, I had a dream, and no one can interpret it, but I have heard it said that you, when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. Joseph replied, I cannot do it. But God will give Pharaoh the answers he desires. And in the search for Joseph's significance, he has finally come to a place of revelation that it's God who reveals and it's God that defines. So this is the guy who never gave God one honorable mention of the dream that he had over his own life. And through the opportunities of favor that he had, he'd never really thanked or given honor to God. But in this moment here, he's standing before the king, and after years and years of a process of significance, he's come to the revelation and the realization that it's God that reveals and it's God that defines. And from that moment is when Joseph finally steps into his destiny. It's when God, when he finally steps into that position of influence and that position of significance. And that's by no accident. That's the same for you when you have a realization that it's not your gift, it's not the position that you find you're in, it's not talking to the right person, it's not positioning yourself under the right leader, it's not saying the right thing at the right time, but it's God that opens the door, it's He that reveals, and it's Him that defines. That it's when we step into our God-given distant destiny, when we don't force it and we allow God to work on our behalf. I'm just going to have a drink of water now. That's how we do it. All right. Now, the life of David couldn't be more different. But yet both David and Joseph land in the palace. They both land in places of opportunity. I don't have time to go through this whole story. I'm going to wrap it up really quickly, but I am going to share this scripture quickly. It's in 1 Samuel chapter 16, verse 4. And it says, Samuel's going to go anoint a king. So Samuel's on his way. So Samuel did what the Lord said. When he arrived at Bethlehem, the elders of the town trembled when they met him. They asked, "Do you come in peace?" Samuel replied, "Yes, in peace. I have come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come to the sacrifice with me." Then he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. When they arrived, Samuel saw Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed stands before the Lord." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not consider his appearance or his height, for I have rejected him. The Lord does not look at the things people look at. People look at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." Then Jesse called Abinadab and passed him in front of him. All of them, "No one, no one, no one." "And nor has the Lord chosen this one." Jesse had seven of his sons pass before Samuel, but Samuel said to him, "The Lord has not chosen these." So he asked Jesse, "Are these all the sons you have?" "There is still the youngest," Jesse answered. He's tending the sheep. Samuel said, "Send for him. We will not sit down until he arrives." So he sent for him and brought him in. He was glowing with health, had a fine appearance and handsome features. And the Lord said, "Rise and anoint him. This is the one." So Samuel took the horn of oil, anointed him in the presence of his brothers. And from that day on, the Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon David. The whole of David's story can be wrapped up in this one phrase. Man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart. See, in other words, people look at the amazing coat, the coat that Joseph wore. People look at the coat, but God looks at the heart. God looks at the heart. Joseph was wrapped up in the coat when David had the heart. The whole process of Joseph was to become like David. In other words, people look... As I said, Joseph was born as the favored youngest son. David was born as the forgotten, faithful youngest son. When Samuel came to David's town, the elders freaked out. They freaked out because Samuel was a very important man. A very, 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 very important man. And they were in the back of nowhere. So when he came to where they lived, they freaked out because, like, what's going on? Something crazy is going on. They lived in they didn't live in the city. They lived in a very foreign part of the land. And so when he came, they were freaked out. Later on, David expresses that his family is the least of his tribe. And he's the eighth born son. In other words, he has no inheritance. You can't divide things up that far. It's just too crazy. All right. The firstborn gets everything, and the secondborn gets a little bit more. By the time you get to the eighth, you get one sheep. All right. That's it. That's all you get. All right. You get nothing. All right. So he's forgotten. He's out because he has no value. And his father says so by his actions, that he's not worthy of this moment of being anointed king. So here's this guy from a nowhere place, from a no-name family, with no value, no inheritance, nothing at all. So the question has to be asked, how did God even find this guy? He's in a nowhere place, from a no-name family, with no inheritance at all. So how did God find this guy? Obviously, it's an easy answer, because he's God. It's not hard, is it? It's because he's God. But how come... We look at David's life and he goes, well, of course God found him. But then when we apply that to our lives, it's like, God can't find me. God doesn't know where I am. I'm in the back of nowhere. There's nothing to my name. There's nothing going on with my name. I don't come from a long legacy of pastors. I don't come from a long legacy of preachers. I don't have any claim. There's nothing on my name. I've got no money. I've got no inheritance. I've got no value. How's God ever going to find me? And we put our position as in what that defines our level of significance. But God cuts through all that. And he sees you right where you are, right where you're at. You don't have to make a name. You don't have to be in the right place. You don't have to be in the right city. He will find you right where you are at. And you will not be defined by those things, but you'll be defined by your heart, your willingness, your ability to respond to him. He's anointed king. He's anointed king, right? So what would you do if you were just anointed king? I'll tell you what I'd do. Shepherd staff in your face. I'm leaving that behind. I'm walking on. I'm walking to the palace. I'm like, open those doors, put out the red carpet. I'm here, right? No more sheep for me. That's it. I'm done. I've been anointed. Smell the oil. I've been anointed. Open the doors, all right? I'm coming in. But that's not what he does at all. What does he do? He returns to the sheep. He returns to the sheep. It's out of his faithfulness. Let me tell you, your authority is not birthed out of opportunity. It's birthed out of loving the things that God loves. He loved the sheep. God's heart is for the sheep. He wasn't caught up in the game. I've been anointed now. Open those doors. I'm coming through. He wasn't caught up in the game. His heart was in the right place. It was after the things that God loved. Right there. So he's tending to the sheep, right? Saul has issues. Lots of issues. King Saul has lots of issues, right? And so he's like, I've got these spirits. I need someone to help me with it. Someone says, oh, there's this kid, David. Beautiful heart, great harpist. Bring him on in. David comes to the king, plays to the king, and the king's like, hey, man, you're the best. You are staying here forever, all right? You are never going home, right? So David is now in front of the king. How did he get to that position? By being faithful where he was. Now, if he had opened up that door himself and gone to the palace and said, I'm here, come on now, it's time. I doubt that he would ever be standing right in front of the king. He may have been around somewhere, but he would never be right where he was meant to be in front of the king. And if he had tried to make that happen himself, he would never be in that position. But here's the cool thing. So now a new anointed king, he's finally in the palace. He's in the place to be, the holy of holies. He's right in the midst of his destiny. But what does he do? Goes back to the sheep. But now it's time. Like, the king has summoned you. You have now been adorned in awesomeness. Surely, why would you go back to the sheep? Why would you go back to the sheep? But it does. He says he goes to and from Saul into the sheep because it says in Samuel, because he loved for his love of the sheep. God's like, this is a guy. This is a guy I can trust because he's not caught up in the game. He doesn't think that by being in the palace that now everything's going to be fulfilled. He's still carrying my heart. This guy's got it. So he's at the sheep. When he's tending the sheep, it's when his father says, I need you to go out to your brothers, give them food. All right? Band, you can come. Thanks. Sorry. Brethren, brothers and sisters of the Lord, come. Grace the stage. His dad sends him to his brothers. And that's where he has his Goliath encounter. Now, I tell you again, if he was anointed king and then went to the palace, stayed at the palace and never went home, would he ever been in the place that he was meant to go to then see Goliath, to then take on what God had always called him to do, that this was meant to unlock his destiny and purpose? We're trying to break down doors, get into places that we're not graced for, and then wondering what we're doing in the middle of nowhere, thinking, how the heck did I get here? When if we'd stayed in the place that God had called us to in our faithfulness and obedience, we would be positioned and aligned to take on our Goliath, to take on what God has called us to do. We're not fighting a fight that was never meant for us, getting weak and burdensome in the midst of that fight. We are being positioned in grace to take on the fight that he has called us to. So he had never gone home. If he'd never had that love for the sheep, he never would have had his dad's permission to go. So he's on the battlefield. And he takes Goliath, kills him, slays him, takes off his head. Great scene. And Saul, this is a great, you can look this up yourself, it's really hilarious. Saul says to David, says to another officer, who is this kid? Who is this kid? Like, and the officer's like, this is David, the son of Jesse, who you've summoned before, the same guy. And Saul's like, says to David, you can never leave my side. Now, I'm sure David's having a deja vu moment here, because Saul said the exact same thing a chapter or so ago. And this is the guy who would take over as king. This is the guy who would make or break David. And this is the guy that's forgotten who he is. I think sometimes we trust in the people who we think make and break us. And this is the reminder that, you know what? It's all forgotten about him. This is the guy that played to him, worshipped to him. The same guy's like, you can't leave, man. You are too good. The same guy has forgotten all about him. He says, who is this guy? And we think by positioning ourselves under that right make and break person, we say the right thing at the right time, then our destiny would be unlocked. And half the time they may even forgotten us. And we sometimes get so angry and so annoyed with those people. How dare they forget us? How dare they forget me? I'm so important. But we have put them in a position they were never meant to have. They don't make us or break us. And so we get this angry and we get this annoyance and we get hurt with the church and we get upset and we're never going back to that place ever again. But we positioned them there. We said, you make or break me. They never make or break us. No man does that. It's him alone. It's God alone who makes us. He makes us. He knitted us together. He knows us. Our destiny is not wrapped up in our ability to outwork it. It's not wrapped up in our ability to outwork it. It's from the grace of God and his ability to lead us in it. And as we continue to be obedient and faithful in what he has given us, it will roll out. It will be revealed. It will be revealed. There's people here tonight, maybe you don't have a relationship with God at all. You don't know him. But you know that there's something more. There's something more to life. You don't know what it looks like. And you're caught up in the game. Just caught up in it. I don't know who you are, what you're doing, what you're here for. That's because you haven't been connected to the one who made you. You haven't understood that he knit you together. That before you were even a thought to anyone on this planet, your destiny, your calling, your purpose had already been shaped and crafted. So how can you feel like you know your place when you don't know the one who gave you a place? Tonight, I want to give you that opportunity to identify your place and who gave it to you. And more than that, tonight, I feel like there's people here that, as I said, you've had a glimpse, you've had a window. You know what the carrot looks like, what your purpose, your destiny looks like, but there's been a disconnect to it, and maybe a lack of faith towards what God is doing, and you're caught up. All you can see right now is the process. You're just like, this process is hectic. This is it. This is too crazy for me. And you are struggling to leave the front door because maybe your destiny has gotten a bit hazy and the calling's gotten a bit hazy. Yeah, I'm just believing tonight that something's going to unlock again. God's going to give you eyes to see. It's going to have some clarity again. You're going to see what God's called you to. You're going to have that moment again. And it's going to see you through. It's going to see you through the storm. It's going to see you through this process. There's some principles about what I shared about tonight, about being faithful, being obedient, not pushing through and not pushing down doors, finding your grace lane, all those sorts of things. But Really, a lot of this stuff can really just come down to your relationship with Him. The whole midst of the process, really. As I said, it's to reveal to us who God is and know who defines us. It's the process. The process is about us not forgetting about Him. Because we can get so caught up in the game. So caught up in it. Wow, man. So caught up in it. And He's like, don't forget me. So everything we go through, all the challenges and the process, and God, what are you doing? And it's about not keeping Him locked out of the whole thing. And embracing all that He has. And listening to His voice and being guided. And, yeah, if that's you tonight, we're going to open up this altar.